First John chapter 2, we're going to look at three verses today, verse 15, 16, and 17. John is telling the people, he writes to them, do not love the world or the things in the world. And if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. One pastor wrote, and I saw in his writings, he says, few problems have been more troublesome for believers down through the centuries than worldliness. In an effort to be relevant and reach our culture, there is the very real danger that we will become just like the culture and lose our distinctiveness. And I thought about that word, distinctiveness. We are to be distinct people, not special, distinct, set apart from the world, because the world operates in a different way than God operates. And we know that the Apostle Paul warned the danger of that in Romans 12, 2. If you're taking notes, he says, when he wrote, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And I like J.B. Phillips' translation of it. He says, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold, but let God remold your lives from within. And that's so powerful, because in order for us to be remolded from within, it begins where? In our hearts. Our heart has to change. There has to be something that enters my heart that allows it to change. Toward the end of his life, Paul, he wrote sadly in 2 Timothy 4:10, for Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. I can't tell you how hard it is not to take it personally when people who have worked with you, alongside you in ministry, desert you for the things of the world. They just leave. You look and you go, wow, what? The first thing I do, and this is a problem that I have, I'm going to be transparent with you. The first thing I have, the issue, is I take it personal. Is it me? Was it something I said? Was it something that I did? But it goes right to the personal part, because it's like not a false humility or like I have to take responsibility for everything, but it's like they're not coming anymore because of me, or they're not helping me anymore because of me. It was something I did. I'm so used to that. And it's something that the Lord is working on me on. But even Paul had Demas leave him. Why? Because he's loved this present world. Even though he had once been a fellow worker with Paul, Demas succumbed to the lure of the world. And we can read that in Philemon. But John wrote this letter, as we know, because the church was being infected and confused, and people were being confused by certain heretics on what was being taught. They claimed to have enlightenment, but John said that they still were in darkness. And so they tried to draw people into their inner circles. And as someone who has navigated through leadership in a church, that's a hard thing when you see other people. I never got offended when people would leave our church to go to another church, as long as it was a Bible teaching church. It didn't offend me, because these are God's people. Because the people from those churches would come to our church and leave their church, as long as they're getting the word of God. And so, but when you have cults, when you have heretics who are going in and drawing people away, kind of like certain ministries that we've heard recently, you know, that are now crashing and burning in Santa Rosa and in Europe, all over the place. But I think what's really interesting is that John takes this personal, and he characteristically draws a sharp line. There's no middle ground with John. If you love the world, you don't love the Father. Plain and simple. And he shows that. You must choose your love and then maintain your choice. You love either the world or you love the Father. One of the two. I think I remember sharing not too long ago, maybe months ago, of being in a men's conference. Some of you don't hear very often, but a pastor telling guys, look, guys, if you're going to be a man, be a man. God created you to be a man, so act like a man and walk like a man. You're either going to walk with God or you're going to walk with the world. You can't do both. Be a man and make a choice, one or the other. And if you're walking with the world, and he started laying out some things in there, if you're fooling around on your wife, you're walking in darkness, you might as well leave. And I was like, whoa. It's good that nobody left. I mean, they're going to leave with him there, but you can't serve both. You can't do both. You have to choose one or the other, and you have to maintain your love for them. And he's saying the same thing that Jesus said in Luke 16:13. You cannot serve God and mammon. You notice that he didn't say you should not serve God and mammon. He says you cannot. You can't do it. It's impossible to serve them both. And we have to make the decision in life, and it's a basic one. We're either going to live to know God and his eternal love, or we're going to live for the world and its fleeting pleasures. How do we know? Because John tells us it's going to pass. For all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world. And it's going to pass. It's going to be gone. You can't take a little of both. Now, I know that to be true because I tried doing that for many years, and it doesn't work. But you have to fight to maintain your choice. And that's why when people make a choice for God, you can tell their life if it's indicative of it or not. Just hearing just this week of, you know, some of my sister has ministered to forever, you know, guy has a problem with drinking, but he's just not being who he should be. And it's not because he's drinking, he's an alcoholic. And what's really sad is his dad died of alcoholism. I know, because I went to school with him. And it was really a sad thing to watch him do it and then watch his kids look at him doing it. Yes, yes. And that's what's heartbreaking, see? Just like what Paul wrote with Demas. And it makes it hard when you are the one who's in leadership and have to go to that person and say, you're either going to love God or you're going to love what you're doing. You're going to love the world. But you can't do both. You're really kind of embarrassing yourself. And you're making a mockery for the cause of Christ when we do that. John says, do not love. It is written in a way that indicates that it's an ongoing battle. Do not love. It's don't love the world. It's something that is ongoing. Why? Because we see it every day in our culture. We're bombarded with things of temptation. Billboards. I mean, I got to be honest. When I come back from Jennifer's or Lincoln City and you see the billboard across from Fort Hill Restaurant and it says Powerball 800 million. You're like, ooh, what's it like to just get half of that, right? Well, you can't get it if you don't play it.
Did you see what was won today? By one person.
One person, yeah.
500 million.
Watch how it changes their lives.
I love all the ads and commercials and things that tell you you deserve it.
Exactly, exactly.
How do they know what I deserve? I could be a rotten, horrible person.
Yeah.
They, you know, why don't they at least be honest? You may not deserve this, but if you want it, come get it because we got it and give it to you.
Yeah.
Sell it to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At least be honest.
Yeah.
Don't tell me I deserve it. You don't know that.
I'll just drop that down all the way into my notes there. Michael lied there. It was not an uncommon thing when I was pastoring the church in California in Los Baños when I knew people were out playing the lottery and going to casinos, hoping that they could, you know, make ends meet. And all the money they invested in that, they could have given to the work of the Lord and allow the Lord to provide for them. And I told this one guy, I said, what are you saying to God when you withhold? And see, this is really hard because I really don't talk about money that much. What I am talking about is where you are wasting your money, though, because you're not being a good steward with God's money. It is God's money, right? Well, yeah, then why do you give it to the casino? Well, I'm trying to, you know, hopefully I can just hit it big. And then I can give the church more money. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking to myself, you're not giving any money now. What makes you think you're going to give more? And it's a classic truth. If somebody says, well, if I had $1 million, I mean, then would you give the church 10%? What is that, $100,000? You're going to give the church $100,000? No, because you're going to look and go, well, wait a minute. That means I'm only going to have $900,000 left. See, it's the way we work in our minds. And really what it is, it's in our hearts. But because of the internet, we now have it bombarding our world with what we should buy, like Danny said. You deserve it. What you should wear, what you should eat. I didn't know that, you know, that I needed Burger King until it came on, mm-hmm. you know, and then I realized how lousy Burger King made me. Sorry, Roy. Carl's Jr.
Today.
Yeah. Yeah. What do they say? What's the theme on there? Have it your way. See? Because you know your way is special.
Or the Home Shopping Network.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, every commercial, I can't imagine, I would venture to guess you would not be able to find an ad or a commercial that didn't appeal to self.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You want it, you deserve it, you need it, you got to have it. Yeah. Something. It's appealing to your sense of, I should have that.
Yep. Years ago, there was a hair dye for women.
Yeah.
And it was because you deserve it.
Yeah.
And we were all like, that's horrible. But now everything is saying that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's just growing.
It is. Because it works. They say in business that in order for you to be able to utilize your product fully, you have to grab the viewer's attention in the first 10 seconds. Otherwise, you lose them. So that's why all of this stuff comes out.
But how best to grab somebody's attention than the self?
Exactly. Exactly.
I heard the magazines have progressed up through the years. I don't remember the steps, but people, us, blah, 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 and self.
Yeah.
It just kept getting more and more self-centered over the years.
Yes.
Yeah. That's crazy. So do not love is written in a way that it indicates it's an ongoing thing. Keep on not loving the world. Basically, is what he's saying. Don't just stop today, but keep on not loving the world. And interesting, because the word that he uses here, love, is the Greek word agape. And it indicates that it's a commitment, not a feeling that John is commanding the people. It's a commitment. Do not love the world.
See, like Sound of Freedom.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and the stuff that we see, the evil that's happening right now, it's easy not to live it. But I guess there's different layers.
Exactly. And the only way that you can fight the love of the world, this is one of the things guys always say, how do I get past that? The only way you can fight the love of the world is to maintain and grow your love for the Father. That's why John meets the two together. The word world or worldliness is the Greek word cosmos. And it's interesting, when I found this out, think about this. The word cosmos occurs 185 times in the New Testament. John uses it 105 of those times completely. So he's used, out of 185, he's using 105. So 80 other times it's used somewhere else. World, cosmos. He used it 70 times in his gospel, 24 times in his epistles, and 3 in the book of Revelation. But he also uses the word to refer to the evil organized system under Satan, which operates through unbelieving people who are God's enemies. He would write, and he's going to write, we're going to see it when we get to chapter 5, verse 19. He says, we know that we are of God and that the world lies in the power of the evil one. Interesting, because Jesus spoke the world hating both him and those who follow him. If you're taking notes, John 15, 18 and 19, Jesus said, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. If the world doesn't hate you, guess what? You're of the world. That's why they hate Christians.
That's what we're seeing.
That's why they hate believers. Anything that has a reference to God, and especially Jesus, the world hates. Immediately they want to come on defense against you. And it goes without saying that the overwhelming influence of the modern media is the tug of the world, and it's greater than it's ever been since the internet started.
It is interesting that by and large, the world will tolerate people talking about God.
Yeah.
Way more than we will when we say the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
That's because God can be.
Yep.
Any.
Yeah.
You could be a God.
It could be your tree. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's less offensive to them because right. it's sort of yeah. you know.
Yeah.
But when mm-hmm. when you say Jesus, that's specific.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they don't want
to
hear.
That. Yeah. You're making a distinct reference yeah. to a person. Who they and I, that's what I always kills me with the atheists. If you don't believe in God, why do you get offended when you hear his name?
Right.
If he's not real and doesn't exist, why does it offend you? Yeah. Because they know it really does. And they just don't want you talking about it. The world system, the lust of, we're going to go over that, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It could be just about anything if you really look at it. Remember the crash of 2008 when the bank was giving astronomical loans and home equity lines of credit to people who couldn't afford it? There was a reason for that. It was to tie them up because they knew what was coming. I remember we had a HELOC home equity loan on our home that we had built in Arizona. And they were giving me a HELOC for $135,000. I didn't even ask for it. They gave it to me. I'm like, well, yeah, just let it sit there. You know, I'm not going to act on it right now, but if I need it, I know it's there. But I thought, why would they do that? I mean, I just built this house. I owe a lot of money on it, but they're going to give me that? And then I noticed that before the crash, about a month before the crash, they cut it down to $35,000. I'm like, well, good, because I probably won't use that either. I can barely afford to make the house payment. How am I going to make a loan? And then the crash happened. They were luring people in there, buying things that they couldn't afford because they knew they were going to lose them. And, you know, a lot of times when Christians attempt to counter worldliness, they can swing too far in the opposite direction if we're not careful. They withdraw from the world along with a whole bunch of extra rules to rein in the flesh. I was reading this one guy, and he was talking about the monastic movement, when you got these priests that go to monasteries, to be away from the world, you know, into silence where there's nothing. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you take that to go and try to live your life like that, what you're saying is, I'm separating myself from this way. And he says, when you do that, it's a monastic movement and the isolationist. And it's groups like the Amish. That's what they do. No good, loving people, but that's what they do. He says, I grew up in fundamentalist circles that had lists of what constituted worldly behavior. It usually included the filthy five, drinking, smoking, attending movies, playing cards, and dancing. Anybody remember that? Many Christian colleges required their students to sign pledges not to participate in these worldly activities. But then they went farther than that. When my dad was a student at one of the Bible institutes, he could not hold hands with my mother on campus, even though they were married. A student who was near graduation was publicly dismissed from the school because he put his arm around his fiancée in the back of an institute bus, and a supporter of the school saw the worldly behavior and reported him. See, that's an extreme that you guys are being worldly. I will say that I know for a fact those five rules that I mentioned, the filthy five, drinking, smoking, attending movies, playing cards, and dancing, literally kept people from coming to church because people would look at them and say, you go to movies? You go to dances? What kind of person are you? See, and they said, well, I want no part of that. Somebody just told me, well, one of our folks that attends here said that his dad, his dad's brother, because he was doing something on a Sunday, working on a Sunday, getting a sewer line fixed. You got to do that, right? I mean, you can't put that off till the next day. Said, you know, what kind of person are you that you would work on Sunday? Well, I know for me, you know what kind of person I am? One that loves my family and wants to take care of them healthy, keep them healthy. But that kind of stuff is what lingered in there. And it's interesting because Paul wrote in Colossians 2:23, he says, these are matters which have, to be sure, the appearance of wisdom in self-made religion and self-abasement and severe treatment of the body, but are of no value against fleshly indulgence. Paul said, when you do that, it's not going to help you. You just now put more rules on you. It's what did Jesus say to the Pharisees? You put rules on people that you don't even keep yourself. It's religion.
What was the last part of that?
He said that it's wisdom and self-made religion and self-abasement and severe treatment of the body, but are of no value against fleshly indulgence. You can do all those things. You're just being religious.
In a perverse way, the abasement and misuse of the body is an indulgence.
Exactly. Exactly.
It sounds like it was tying it into that.
Yeah. And so it's really crazy because what happens is people begin to take on that persona of, I'm away from the world. I'm not worldly. I'm following what John says, do not love the world or anything in the world, the love of the Father. And it becomes a look at me, which in itself is worldly, because it's about what? Self-indulgence, what we talked about earlier. And yet we don't look at it that way, but you are being, because that's what the world does. Look at me. I mean, case in point, 500 million selfies, you know why? Because it's about me. Look at me, this is me over here. I shared last week that a gal who was showing her grandson a picture of his great-grandfather with, who was the guy that flew, Lindenberg. The Lindenberg. Showed him a picture. He's standing next to Lindenberg. Is it? Lindbergh. And the grandson says, well, who's that? Well, that's Lindbergh. He's the one that flew from New York to Paris, the first one that flew nonstop, 33 and a half hours it took him. And your grandfather is in a picture with him. He's like, whoa. He said, compromise, or look at that now. What happens today, 50 years from now, when the kids ask, well, what's this a picture of? Well, that's a picture of me. Well, what I ate this morning. Well, that's a picture of a pair of shoes I wanted to buy. Well, that's a picture of the car I wanted to buy. Everything is about me, self-indulgence. That's a worldly thing, and that's what the world wants us to do. They want us to get caught up in that. And these are some of the things that John is speaking to them about.
Just real quick, I think it goes along with this. In Matthew 5:16, that verse came to mind as you were going through some of that. It says, let your light shine before men in such a way that they glorify your Father in
heaven. Exactly.
So, it's not just let your light shine before men or your right. works, but in a way that doesn't highlight me, doesn't bring attention to me, but glorifies God.
Right.
That's, I mean, it's a hard thing to do, but you can do it.
Yeah.
But too often people will do their good works and say, well, see what I've done?
Yeah, we had someone, I won't name names, relative, came and helped us do something that we desperately needed help. It was manpower. It was wonderful. And his thing was, well, what did he say?
This is my service.
To the Lord.
I didn't serve the Lord this week. This is my service.
Don't
and I'm thinking,
you just do it because you love somebody? Yeah. It's kind of odd. It hit me odd.
I know.
It's like, look at me. Yeah. I'm serving God for you.
I thought it was because you love me.
But you don't announce it.
That's wanting praise for it.
Exactly. Yeah. It really, what I took it as, see, I'm not really here for you. I'm here for God. And God sees what I'm doing. Yeah, he sure did, because you let your left hand know what your right hand was doing.
Yes, exactly.
It just hit me out. It's not that I was bad. But
worldliness is at its core, is just as Danny said earlier, it's a matter of the heart. If your heart is captured by the world, you're going to love the things of the world. If your heart is captured by the love of God, you're going to be drawn to Him and the things of God. We love God so much, and then you say, well, but that doesn't glorify God, so therefore I can't be a part of that. I don't want to do that. And the only way that our hearts can be transformed, which I've said forever, so that we love God, is by the supernatural new birth. You must be born again. If a person's not born again, there's no need to seek after the things of God, because you're still a natural man. You can't understand the things of the Spirit. It operates, the world system operates on a basis of ungodly thoughts and attitudes and motives, values, and goals. We see that out of Isaiah 55. It doesn't seek to promote God's glory or to submit to His sovereign authority. It is, in this sense, of why we're not to love the world, because it glorifies the world. Anything that's worldly, you glorify it. The extreme is what I wrote off earlier when I said, when people begin to say, well, I'm going to become monastic. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to shut everybody. Can you imagine that? I literally, Lynn and I would shut everybody else out because this is not the world. We made it God's place, and we don't want anybody else to come here to infiltrate on it. I don't know who they are, so I'm going to push them away. I mean, that's insane. Jesus said, go out into the world, right? If we didn't go into the world, I mean, people are not going to hear. And the whole thing is that he's telling us, don't get caught up in the things of the world. He uses the three aspects of the worldly system, which, by the way, were in the garden. The lust of the flesh, which is the body, lust of the eyes, obviously the eye, and the pride of life. What is the pride of life? It's ego. It's me, what I do here. And let's look back at the first one, though, the lust of the flesh. John is referring here to the things of the body, okay? And so for our example, let's look at food and drink. John's not saying that food and drink is evil, okay? It's the over-desire of it that produces worldliness. We got to be careful, see? I love to eat. That's all there is to it. But I have to be careful, because if I'm not careful, I'm going to become unhealthy. And I need to take care of, why? Because God created this body. I need to take care of it. And so, but worldliness can be, if we fall into that, looking at the commercial. I'll tell you right now, every time a Burger King commercial comes on, I'm not even thinking about it. But when I see it, I'm like, ooh, I think we need to. It's a good thing we live far away from it, right? Because I would go to it. And I better be careful there. I'm not a big Dairy Queen fan. But anyway, that's the closest thing.
The fast food stuff, and I've done this, I've looked at if you make a hamburger at home, or if you go to a decent restaurant that makes them fresh, you can get the same basic kind of burger that you would at, let's say, a Whopper. And you can go to maybe someplace like either an IHOP or whatever, get a burger that has, and you got about a third the calories.
Yeah.
In the one, as opposed to the burger, the Whopper. Why is that? Well, there's something they're putting in that's kind of addicting you, getting you to come in and get that. I mean, it's, and yet, so you're eating the same thing, but over here, your body is not going to be doing near as well as eating
a
healthy made burger.
Exactly.
You can't make a healthy made burger.
Exactly. And how many more can you make for what it costs to go buy one?
But a Whopper, that kind of stuff, I mean, they're not.
It was shocking to me to find out the restaurants that purposely used MSG, and it wasn't for the seasoning, because they knew it was going to create a desire for more. KFC, Chinese food, all these things. I mean, I can sit there and eat Chinese food for days and say, I want some more. And I didn't figure out why until I read that. I'm like, ooh, I just double dosed on them carbs. You know, a little bit should have been enough for me. But here it is. We talked about food. John's not saying that food and drink is wrong. It's the over-desire of it that produces that worldliness. We talked about the word for lust some time back, or craving it. In the Greek, remember I said it was epithymeo, which is the which is the intensity point. Epi, think about that for a minute. Epithumeo. Taking something that is innately good and making it the ultimate. Good burger.
Chocolate peanut butter ice cream.
Yeah. And making it the ultimate, I have to have it. Even though I know you really should only have this much, Al. But that didn't satiate me. I need more, and I want more. Epi. Think about that. Epi is the epicenter of an earthquake. We look and say, where's the epicenter at? Where is the starting point of it? Because it's where it all began. And the power of it spreads away from it to its strongest point. From its strongest point, it goes away. So worldliness starts here in the heart, and then it spreads out. And that's what we have to be careful of, that it's taking something good and making it ultimate. And that's when it becomes sin, because that's when it is lust. See?
For me, like when you say making it the ultimate, I think of it in terms of thinking that somehow your happiness is in that.
Exactly. Exactly.
That, you know, I'm only going to be happy if I
get
that meal.
Exactly.
I'm only going to be happy if I can have that thing.
Yeah.
If I can buy this or go there. That's the only thing that's going to make me happy. And you find that never does that actually bring any kind of lasting happiness. Because once it's over, you're lamenting the fact that it's gone.
Yeah.
And so, happiness should never, ever be found in anything outside of your relationship with God.
Exactly.
That's got to be where true happiness is grounded, because then anything that comes your way, anything that comes your way is not going to affect you or throw you off.
Yeah. Take it more personal. Relationships. You have people who I've like, oh, no. I've counseled them. I've heard them say, if something happened to her or something happened to him, I would just die. I know it's an expression we use. But when you get to the place where they're actually saying, I can't live anymore because they died. I can't live without them, therefore I'm taking my life. That's sinful. That's epithumeia. That's taking something that was innately good and making it the ultimate. You're saying, God, I can't live without this person. That person was created by God. The person was taken back by God. And what you're saying is now you're putting that person in the place of God. And it's a very hard thing for people to get past. You have to be able to say, I thank you for the time that I had with them. But you still move forward because you're still living. See? That I'm not talking about people that chemically have lost themselves. They're no longer who they were. I've had friends commit suicide. Guys who loved the Lord tremendously, they did. But I knew deep within themselves, they were not themselves anymore. It was a different person than what I knew. Now, people can say, well, he lost his salvation. Well, we know you can't lose something you've never had. But for him, all of the drugs and all of the stuff that happened to him, I'm not talking about street drugs, all of this experimentation with lithium and all these things that the doctors were doing because of his abuse with steroids, neurologically, it changed him to where he wasn't even the same person anymore. This guy was strong as could be. I mean, in his mind and in his heart, when I got the word that he had killed himself, I'm like, that can't be. That just can't be. This guy was tougher than I thought I was. But he just was not the same person. But when somebody literally goes that way because they lose a relationship, you have to begin to look at your relationship with God and say, where's that? See, you got to look at the vertical first before you look at the horizontal. And so John is basically trying to get these people to not follow these heretics because they were dealing with the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. You can have whatever you want. The body is material, and material is evil. Therefore, if your body's committing sin, it's not you. Okay? We see that today, what? Modern day alcoholics, not taking responsibility. Well, it's not me, it's the alcohol. I'm an alcoholic. That's why I do what I do. Yeah. It's a disease.
I mean, that's what they call a disease, which makes you not responsible for the choice.
Yes, exactly. That's a choice. There's the key. Is it a disease or was it a choice?
You have a choice.
Yeah, exactly. There is so much that I want to be able to go into that, but we can take that in anything if you really think about it. You could do a job. Well, I need this job, this particular job, because I can make the most money doing this job. But if a job takes you away from your relationship with God, that's worldliness. And I've had people say, well, but if I take this one, I can give more money to the church. But is it going to pull you away from God? God doesn't want your money. He don't care about your money. He doesn't care about how much you can give to the church. He cares about your heart and who you are in him. Because when you die and take your last breath and you stand before him and you hear him say, what did you do with my son? Well, I walked away from him. I got caught up in the world because of my job. People don't like hearing that.
I gave a whole bunch of money.
Exactly. Exactly. If we're not doing what God has called us to do, to become kingdom-minded, then we're worldly-minded. You're either worldly-minded or you're kingdom-minded. And I think it gets so lost a lot of times, because even when I said it earlier, it didn't sit right with me. If somebody's not giving to the work of God, then they're being selfish. I don't like saying that, but it's like that for me as well, though. So what is worldly and what isn't? Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And the pride of life is a very interesting phase. What does John mean by that? The Greek word, think about this for a minute, the Greek word pride is used to describe a braggart who's trying to impress people with their importance. That's the pride. That's the pride of life. It's described as a braggart who is trying to impress people with his importance. And you've heard me say forever and a day. It's like, I've been around some really good pastors. I really have. You only hear me talk about the bad ones. I've been around guys who like that position. They like the way the people come around them and lift them up. They feel it because they didn't have it in their life. And it's like a drug. They just get hooked on it. And they begin to believe that they're special. So they begin to say things that makes them special. Things that aren't even true that make them special. And they begin going and promoting themselves. And it's not just the pastor. It can be anybody in a church who's been given, like somebody, like I can remember picking guys because anybody that I've ever picked for leadership was because of what I saw them already doing. You're already doing the work of the minister. You're way past doing the work of a deacon. You know, you're doing the work of an elder now. And it was always because of what I've already seen. Why? Because I was taught that. And so what I would do, myself, Linda, we were so busy just doing that other people would see it. And we didn't do it so they could see it. We were doing it because we couldn't sit still. We couldn't sit in a pew. That's what happened here when we got here to Oregon. I just couldn't sit in a pew anymore. I'm like, if I don't belong here, I don't need to do anything because I kind of like what I was not doing. I wasn't in charge no more. But I liked what I was doing. And I think a lot of times people, when they have the wrong motive of heart to do things, because the first time that you don't acknowledge them or don't pat them on the back, what happens? Well, I don't feel called to do this anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. And their service for God goes by the wayside. And it's really a hard thing, because where does worldliness work into that? You want people to see who you are. And it's very hard to really kind of fight that. The pride of life also can be the pride of power. I'm the one in charge here. See? Or the pride of prestige. Look at me because of what I do. You know? It doesn't have to be in the church. It can be in your job or wherever. And you've always heard me say this. My dad would always say, if you have to tell someone what you do, it's more than likely because they don't see it. You got to tell them what you're doing. You're bragging. That's pride of life. But it's also the pride of control. when people say, no one, I don't allow people to tread on me. I don't give up my rights to the needs of other people. Really what they're saying is that when they feel put down, they think to themselves, they don't know who I am. Why are they talking bad about me? They have no idea who I am. Well, who are we? The Bible says we're made of dirt. We're made of dust, and we're going to go back to that. And really what that is, if we continue to live in as the world does, we're going to be sucked into it. And if John, he's telling the people, if you love the world, the love of the Father is not in us.
That pride of life and the description you just had explains the demonic world system.
Exactly. With
social media and everything is geared about what we're talking
exactly.
about. Exactly. Look at my pictures. Look at me. It's all geared that way now.
You think about that for a moment. You've heard the saying, they sold their soul to the devil, right? Anybody ever heard that? Mm-hmm. In Hollywood, in the music industry, that's prevalent. I happen to know someone personally who said that they did that. I sold my soul to Satan so I could learn to play the guitar. And I wanted to play the guitar. And without any instruction or anything, I began playing the guitar. Now, that offends me because I've tried many times to play the guitar. And that's why we have CD worship, because Al cannot learn how to play the guitar. Maybe if I prayed enough. But I'm not willing to sell my soul to the world to do that. And a lot of times when people do that, and like Linda was talking about, with social media, and that when that's garnering, that what we have is self-love. And we need the love of Jesus, not our own messed up pseudo-love. There's a lot of self-love that's going on. John's saying, don't love the world. That's, self-love is of the world, basically. Sherry, do you have something you want to share?
No.
Okay.
There is, but then you have the balance of, I'm a horrible person.
Exactly. The extreme opposite. Yeah.
Too, so.
Yeah, I had, yeah, when you try to, I try to be an encourager to people. You know, you're really good at that. But when the person rebuffs what I say, I'm like, I should have never said anything to you. No, you're really good at that. You do a good job at that. Well, I'm not as good as so-and-so. No, but you're better than me. So that makes you better at that than me, right? I mean, you couldn't go and kick in doors and rescue people, but you sure can do that real well, whatever that is.
It can, and not with everybody, but there are people that can do that, and it's an attention getter.
Exactly.
It's the other way
exactly.
of bragging on
yes.
oneself.
Yes.
It's
exactly.
the flip side of that.
Exactly.
I'm horrible to get accolades.
You know.
Yeah, that's why I like that saying where humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less.
Yeah.
That's what humility is. So he's saying, don't love the world because of what it is. It's what our verse tells us. It's a system against God. The world is a system against God. And we can be in the world, and there's nothing wrong with that. We can enjoy the beauty that's around us and the things of God. But some people can be drawn away through the world system through many things. And those things are whatever takes a back seat to the things of God. They were on so much, they were on so fire for the Lord, and now they're just a little smoke thing. There's not even flame anymore. Leaving the world. I used to think working in a church would keep a person from the world, but it doesn't. You know, it's a thing that's in our heart. We can't separate. I thought I'd be isolated and insulated when I was in my office in the church. The only problem is I'm dealing with issues that are outside in the world. Why? Because I want to draw them to Christ. And to do that, I need to be around that. See? When I talk about a job, it's like there are some people that if you know more about your job than you know about God, then that's worldly. People say, oh man, come on. No. Is there a desire to know him more? Well, I go to church. I didn't ask you that. Do you know him? Do you have a relationship with him? But also at the same time, these folks, same folks, when it comes to the serving the kingdom of God, many times are, well, I'm too tired from work, or it's my only day off. Well, I understand that. Well, Sunday, I hear it, Sunday's my only day off. I'm like, I wish I had Sundays off. I don't get Sundays off. I have to work. But it's already, it's an issue of the heart, as we were talking about. And you know what? This world's passing away. We know it. Verse 17 tells us that. We already see it with the impending collapse of our economy. It is so volatile right now, nobody knows what it's going to do. Nobody knows what it's going to do. And the world is passing away and the lust of it. But look at the end of verse 17. But he who does the will of God abides forever. It's all passing away. It's designed that way. And that's why we're not to put all our emphasis in the things of the world. But the things that are done for the kingdom of God will be the only things that really last. I want to close with this. If anyone loves the world system, if you're caught up in it, if you have made it your epithemeo, it's not too late to change it. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not of him. And I've had people, I actually wrote in quotes here, I had somebody tell me this, but Al, I don't like that. I don't like that saying. Well, neither do I, but the Lord is the one who said it. And he got a hold of my heart because I was in the world big time. And that's why I know this to be true. And it is my prayer that other people would come to that place of realizing, you know, I'm thankful to be in this world. I'm thankful that I don't have another 68 years to be here because it's going to be good. Why? Because God is in it and I want to serve him and the things of him. Let's pray. Lord, I want to thank you for your disciple, John, Lord, who just totally knew exactly what to say at that time, which made it invaluable for us today. How much we need you and how much we need to just surrender everything to you, Lord. Even our knowledge, we need to surrender it to you. Our possessions, Lord.